Trendstorm.
Our final topic, picked by you, dear listeners, earlier in a poll on our Facebook page, is Istanbul Summit, Refugees, Reform, and Reconstruction, focusing on the latest multilateral talks over Syria. This Saturday's Syrian summit in Istanbul will see the leaders of Turkey, Russia, France, and Germany gathering to discuss the war-torn country's refugee, constitutional reform, and reconstruction issues as the world tries to finally hammer out a comprehensive and multilateral solution to this long-running conflict. Russia and Turkey are part of the Astana framework, while France and Germany are regarded as members of the so-called Small Group on Syria that also counts among its members the U.S. and some Arab states. This pragmatic meeting between the two camps, for lack of a better word, will assess the state of affairs in Syria and see if some common ground can be reached. The two European grey powers are most immediately concerned with Syrian refugees because of how heavily politicized the issue has become, but they've hitherto been reluctant to repatriate these individuals back to their homeland out of what they claim is the fear that they might be persecuted upon their return. This segues into one of the reasons why they want to ensure progress on Syria's UNSC 2254 mandated constitutional reform, which in turn could be incentivized if they broke ranks with the U.S. and committed to investing in the country's post-war reconstruction. The situation isn't as black and white as that, however, because the devil's in the details. As always, the Syrian Arab Army has thus far succeeded in restoring the sovereignty of the democratically elected and legitimate government over the most populated portions of the country, but has struggled with this in Idlib and the northeast, where the battle lines remain frozen per official and unofficial agreements between Russia and Turkey and Russia and the U.S., respectively. A political solution, therefore, appears to be the only way out of this impasse. But Damascus wants to return to its pre-war centralized state, while some of its opponents want to decentralize it. Furthermore, there are differences between Astana partners Russia and Turkey over the proper way forward. What everyone seems to agree upon, however, is that Syria urgently needs reconstruction aid, though the small group on Syria want to make this conditional on progress being made on constitutional reform, while Turkey has no interest in investing in the liberated areas of the country at all. Moreover, Damascus previously said that it won't accept aid from any other countries responsible for its conflict, but circumstances might compel it to change its tune. Therefore, it looks like the politics of post-war reconstruction aid will take precedence over the other two issues because everything seems to proceed from there, though all three are nevertheless closely interconnected. So folks, while this program is going on air on the day that the summit occurs, my hope is that this program will cover the broader topics of refugees, reform, and reconstruction so that you can listen to this program anytime across the next week or even the next month. So having said that, the first expert that we're going to speak to today is Mr. Brecht Jonkers. He's an historian and journalist.
Trendstorm.
All right, Brecht, the German government is under intense grassroots pressure to urgently deal with the Syrian refugee and migrant issues in order to stem the steady rise in support that they provided for the AfD opposition. So what realistic options exist for Berlin to responsibly address this problem in Istanbul?
Well, of course, I believe that the most important thing that needs to be done in order to settle the so-called issue of Syrian immigrants, Syrian refugees to any nation that is not Syria, basically, is obviously the ending of the Syrian conflict and basically the end of the terrorist activity of the so-called quote-unquote rebels that are funded by imperialist other powers to destabilize Syria. We've been seeing a war going on for about 7 years now that has displaced millions of people, of which the majority of which are displaced internally, but a whole group of others, millions of other Syrians, have been finding their refuge in nations either nearby in the Middle East or in Europe. In fact, now that Syria is getting closer and closer to hopefully be completely liberated and reunified soon, with the exception, of course, of the province of Idlib and the areas in the northeast, We have seen that since in the past few years, according to the Turkish Ministry of the Interior, over 245,000 Syrians have already returned home in the past few years, of which several hundreds of whom, for example, were entering Syria just yesterday, crossing the border from Lebanon straight into Syria. So, of course, it still means that there are millions, many millions more that are still not have returned. It can be for a variety of reasons, mainly, of course, the threat of continued war and violence and terrorist activity. But if I believe that, realistically speaking, if Berlin is serious about trying to really settle the problem of the Syrian refugees that have been coming to Germany in droves, then they should try to help Syria, try to help to negotiate indeed with Russia, especially in establishing a full and total peace in Syria that will put an end to this ongoing war that has been waged by terrorist factions.
Okay, Brecht. Well, you know, the U.S. threatened to tighten the sanctions regime against Syria if it doesn't make progress on forming a constitutional committee by the end of the month. So how influential of a factor do you think this will be in determining whether any success is made in this issue before then?
Well, the important thing, of course, is that the United States has no actual legitimate right to meddle or in Syria's internal affairs or to demand anything, really. So I don't think this, the Syrian Arab Republic or the Russian Federation are really taking any demands by the Trump administration regarding Syria very serious right now, because especially since both Trump and his predecessor Barack Obama have shown to behave at times as an enemy of Syria's interest and of Syria's internal stability. I believe the best statement about this was made by the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov recently, in which he says that he hopes that the Constitutional Committee will meet as soon as possible, but he has sided with the Syrian government and with a Syrian colleague in saying that Moscow rejects any form of artificial date setting of this constitutional committee, and in which Syria also has said to the United Nations envoy to Syria that they would not accept any foreign meddling, no foreign demands about the constitutional committee being formed or by what time they will get to work or conclude their work. You have to understand, of course, since that this is a conflict that has ravaged the nation for 7 years, and one cannot just quickly adapt the constitution in the middle of wartime and expect that to go very quickly and very fast. In fact, we should be very grateful that Syria is cooperative enough, let's say, with the international community, that they are willing to continue with this form of constitutional change because this shows that Damascus is serious about addressing any internal issues that they have and achieving a just and fair peace as soon as possible.
Okay, now the U.S. and Saudi Arabia are investing in the Northeast to, as they see it, contain Iran, and they're also opposed to the 2015 nuclear deal with it, while France and Germany have much better relations with Iran, and they support the deal. So, Brecht, could they invest in the liberated areas of Syria as a means of spiting both great powers, the U.S. and Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, I think that the most important thing, of course, regarding any form of occupation of the Northeast is that, and something that is often overlooked, is that this is completely and totally illegal and in violation of all sorts of international law or law regarding the national sovereignty of nation states. So this American, let's say what they call American support to Kurdish forces or the Syrian Democratic Forces, as they call it, is of course completely illegal. And the idea that this is done to contain Iran is completely laughable and it's ridiculous, of course. And has been called out both by Syria and by Russia and other nations in the past. It is indeed going to be very interesting to see what France and Germany are going to do. I do believe and I do hope that they will be trying to, let's say, set Trump straight, set the United States straight, by pressuring the United States at giving up or at least reducing its military occupation of Syrian soil. And one of the best ways to do that for France and for Germany is to indeed ensure that they increase their friendly relations or at least cordial relations with the Islamic Republic of Iran, and to help to basically promise that they will help in the reconstruction efforts and the investing efforts in the Syrian Arab Republic. So this would indeed be a great counterweight, especially now in the time after the brutal assassination of Saudi dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi, which is, of course, being seen as a major slight to Europe and to the United States as well. I do believe that hopefully the European nations will see enough sense to notice that the U.S. and Saudi coalition's plans to balkanize Syria are doomed to fail and are definitely not in anyone's best interest, especially not Syria's. So I believe we can indeed see an increased, let's say, rapprochement between the French and the Germans on one side, and maybe the Syrian Arab Republic on the other side, of course, mediated by Russia.
Breck, this was a comprehensive interview about the interconnected issues of refugees, reform, and reconstruction in Syria. Thank you so much for updating us on everything. Now we're going to hear what Mr. Navid Nasser has to say. He's an independent analyst based in Maryland.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Navid, the refugee and migrant outflow from Syria has drastically slowed over the past year, and the crisis is well past its peak after Damascus stabilized large swaths of the country and Russia struck a deal with Turkey over Idlib. So what else needs to be done to encourage expatriates to return to their homeland?
Well, depending on how badly the Syrian government wants Syrian expats and migrants to return home, there's several things that can still be done. One is a blanket sort of amnesty for people who were involved in the fighting on the wrong side. Now, this is a catch-22 because if the Syrian government decides to do this, if the Assad government decides to do this, what happens is some of these people, a lot of these people, I think, their actual worldview or ideology isn't necessarily going to change. It's just going to remain dormant until such time as it's convenient for it to rise to the surface again. I think that has been the case over the course of the last at least decade and change in Syria prior to 2011. That was the case. In 2011, there was this space, this opportunity for it to rise to the surface instead of just being dormant and in the background. So it could happen now. It could happen where there's an amnesty. And so these people and their families will return home wherever in Syria that is. And then, let's say, in a decade and a half, whatever, they're given this opportunity to do what they do. I don't know. If I was in some way involved with the Syrian government, I would push to evaluate each of these expats on an individual basis, as opposed to doing things to encourage all of them to return to Syria en masse blanketly. I think in particular, I don't think it's unfair or whatever to ask Turkey to deal with as many of these people as possible on its own territory, house them, give them whatever aid they need, work, whatever. I mean, if they aided them when they were in Syria, they should be able to aid them in Turkey also.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Well, David, Damascus's recent string of victories has emboldened it to stand very firm on its position of restoring the centralized state and ensuring the continuation of President Assad's term in office. But these are two main issues that the opposition largely disagrees with, and which some people say is responsible for freezing the political process. Now, what are the odds that the Istanbul summit will change any of this?
I mean, this is just my personal opinion, but the Istanbul summit, I mean, I guess you could say sort of Russia is de facto also representing Syria there. But to me, it doesn't make sense that such a summit exists without the presence of the government in question, of the country in question. There's something comical about it. Like, there's no, like, what, first of all, Syria isn't a defeated power. It's basically won this war. It's defeated everything that these other powers, including other representatives at the table at the Istanbul summit, aside from Russia, have thrown at it. So it has won the right to dictate. I mean, it always had the right, but now it has won the right to dictate its own future instead of having these countries dictated for them. Again, if I was in some way, shape, or form involved in the Syrian government, and, you know, France, Germany, Turkey, whoever said that, you know, this has to happen here, and this has to happen with Idlib, and such has to happen there, I'd be like, who are you, and what gives you the right to decide what happens to our country, to our soil, on our soil? Like, you've done everything you can to destroy our country, and now you're trying to dictate the terms of peace to us. Like, to me, on its face, it's ridiculous. If the Syrian government decides that some of the terms are acceptable, that's on them. Glad that Russia is there to be a counterbalance. But I don't think fundamentally that the Istanbul Agreement should be the framework for the Syrian government itself going forward, unless it's something that happens to coincide with their vision of Syria going forward.
Okay, yeah, I totally understand. I think those are some pretty fair points that you brought up. Now, Navid, the U.S. said that it might sanction any companies that reconstruct the liberated, or as it terms it, Damascus-controlled areas of Syria prior to constitutional reform. So how powerful of a deterrent might this be in keeping EU investment out and preventing a deal from being reached in Istanbul?
Well, actually, I think Russia is a key here in determining which direction the EU goes with regards to investment and reconstruction in Syria. The EU has sort of floundered and gone in multiple different directions when it comes to U.S. sanctions on Russia itself and on Iran. It's obvious that they want to and need to do business with both of those countries, but at the same time, they've also sort of made a show at various times of going with the flow when it comes to U.S. sanctions for fear of any reprisals coming its way from that quarter. I do think they want, by and large, the EU wants to be involved in reconstruction in Syria and wants to resume investing in Syria. So I think, again, then this is going to come down to what Russia can do to grease the wheels here. I think if given the space, given the opportunity, the EU is going to get involved in reconstructing and in investing in Syria. And it's U.S. sanctions, I think, are going to be mostly toothless here. Mostly toothless. There's plenty of opportunity, even in the aftermath of Gulf War I. French companies, Total, for example, were involved. Were on the ground there in Iraq almost immediately after, even though the U.S. was wagging its finger. And I mean, bottom line is what we live in a world where capital is the supreme law of the land, and you can't coexist side by side with certain countries dictating to other countries where they can or can't invest in, where they can or can't be involved in financially. So whether it's under the table, over the table, via some sort of legal loophole, I think it's a 99% chance that the EU is going to be involved in reconstructing and investing in Syria.
Navid, this was a thorough discussion about the future of Syria in view of the Istanbul Summit's proclaimed goals of resolving the refugee, reform, and reconstruction questions.
Trendstorm.
So folks, if we think back on what both Brecht and Navid shared with us today, we can see that for sure, the U.S. has no place to make demands of the Syrian Arab Republic. But at the same time, I think we do have to recognize that it does have some leverage over the EU, for better or for worse. Ultimately, it might end up being a game changer if France and Germany commit to reconstructing Syria. Should that be the case, then we might actually see some progress being made by all parties in finally bringing about a political solution to this long-running conflict. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. And with this, we end this week's edition of Trendstorm, brought to you by Radio Sputnik. It was presented by me, Andrew Krepko. Thank you for listening, and take care.